You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 120. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, the Indians beat the White Sox and Orioles by quite a bit in some games. There were finger guns everywhere. Shane Bieber had a really good outing. I feel like I owe an apology to Mike Freeman. Oscar Mercado has been really good. And this week, we're going to answer a bunch of your questions in sort of a mailbag episode. Nobody to interview, so that'll be fun. Joining me for all that and more, as always, is Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
No, I'm fine. How are you?
It's going good. Other than the game we just sort of watched the... It's over by the time people hear this, obviously, but there was a couple of bats that were pretty bad against the A's there at the end.
A couple of trash boys in there, yes, I agree.
It's a little... I feel like we're going to talk about it at some point later, but Carlos Gonzalez is still apparently on this team, and I'm not
sure
why. Get
him out of there, yep, I agree.
So yeah, let's just talk about the games that we've had this week. I mean, the Indians, the offense, for the first time, I believe all season, they went over 5 runs against the White Sox when they scored 10, and then they scored, what was it, like 9 against the Orioles, and then 17 or 14 against the Orioles. So they've gone crazy on offense. I mean, it's kind of beating bad teams, but it's always the old adage, you got to beat who's put in front of you, and that's who the Indians had in front of them, and they absolutely destroyed them. So so what are some of your thoughts from just the offensive explosion we saw this week from these teams?
Well, I mean, we could definitely ignore the fact that they lost 9-1 to the White Sox back on May 6th.
Nope, that was past a week. We don't talk about that.
That's true. That was a long time ago. We didn't care about that. Or the fact that in those two games in between.
Acknowledge that.
Anyway, moving on. Sometimes you're reminded that there's some teams out there that, you know, you complain about your favorite team being bad. For instance, many have in the past complained in the recent past about the Cleveland Indians being bad at 25-20. And then you do something like watch the White Sox or, God help you, watch the Orioles. And whoo, baby. I mean, Trey Mancini can really hit the ball. He's a very talented hitter. But after that, what is going on with that? That team is doing everything it's supposed to, I know, but they are really bad. They are not good at all. I mean,
I've forgotten what it's like to watch a team like that. I don't feel like we've had an Indians team that bad. Like in the last
ever.
Decade?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's been an Indians team as bad as the Orioles are since the early 90s. And I think even that is a stretch. The Indians just never did this. I mean, it was never a thing. The Indians have never had the opportunity to be bad. And, well, they had one opportunity, I guess, right at the turn of the decade to do this. But they just never were that bad. I think part of that was just that the division was really not great too. The Royals were terrible. The Tigers were really good, obviously, but beyond that, the Twins were kind of scuffling around, and the Sox and Sox were stinky too. And that's kind of the downside to being in the AL Central in this era of the tank. You can't do it. You just can't do it well, because somewhere else there's a team like, you know, the Marlins getting just bludgeoned. However many, what, 19 times 4, whatever that number is, just in their own division. Or, you know, again, the Orioles, because they have to play the Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox. There's these teams that are just going to get annihilated because they play the Reds. You feel so bad for the Reds sometimes. They're really bad, but also they're playing against 3 playoff teams, like 3 borderline World Series contenders.
I feel like the Reds at least have something to watch. Because, I mean, you got Puig, you got Joey Votto. There's a couple young players. It's like the Orioles are just a wasteland.
Like last year, they were so bad, the Reds. But that's the thing too. Yes, this year the Orioles are particularly a wasteland. I mentioned before Trey Mancini, but beyond that, they have 2 other guys having an above average influence on the offense with an OPS over 100. Then you get down to 94 by Rio Ruiz, and then 70. Oh, there's a 9. Okay, Jonathan Villar is being just slightly below average. Yeah, no, they stink. Then the bad thing about them too is their bullpen is bad, and as we've watched the last 2 years, nothing can make a good team look bad like a bad bullpen. But when you have a bad starting pitching and a bad bullpen and no hitting and maybe the worst hitter in baseball over the last couple of years ever in Chris Davis, it's really a perfect storm of just dreadful. You feel bad. You really hope that manager gets to experience you know, the good side of things at some point, because this is a hell of a way to start your managerial career.
He just looks so dead inside. He was also the first base coach for the Cubs in 2016, so I mean, screw that guy, but it's just, he just looks so dead on the inside.
I thought he came,
Every time he was on the sideline.
It's their GM who came over from the Astros. That's who it was. Yeah, okay.
No, their manager now was the first base coach of the Cubs in 2016.
Right, but Mike Elias, their general manager, also came over from the Astros.
Oh, so, gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's two teams who were really good at being this bad, so.
Mike Petriello actually wrote that Chris Davis, despite starting as bad as he did and still not being fantastic, I mean, he could be an all-star just because the Orioles have to send somebody, and they're blocked everywhere else by even their marginal players are blocked by better players on other teams, so. Chris Davis could go 0 for whatever to start the season and still be an all-star just because his team is so bad.
I want this to happen now. You know what's going to happen. They're going to send a fucking reliever.
Of course. That's what it
Although
always
who?
Is.
Although who? Michael Givens? Teams. I don't even know. I mean, he's not that bad, but Paul Fry, who we saw get beaten up by the Orioles, like some random guy is going to go, or not Dylan Bundy. He's bad too. John.
He's only good against the Indians now.
I don't even know. Like, this team's just very bad. So it's hard to get too psyched. Obviously, it's satisfying to notch some wins, and it's nice to beat up on a bad team every now and again. But then things do happen, like you lose to them 5-1. You go, God damn it, what the hell happened? And what happened was, I don't even know what happened that game. That was a weird one.
That was just Dylan Bundy, and the offense looked atrocious. That was one, I don't know, that was part of where Oscar Mercado was sat out for no reason. I know he's not going to save everything, but that was kind of like another really annoying decision by Terry Francona just to sit him out for no reason, just because you got to get Carlos Gonzalez his at bats.
I don't, yeah. Let's,
that was a really frustrating game because of all the bunting they tried, and I don't know. And losing to Dylan Bundy is just frustrating, even though they scored so many runs the two games before and the game after they scored a bunch of runs. But it's just, that game was a low point, sort of, which is weird in the sea of other games that I was in.
We were talking about before the podcast about how Lou Trevino is a great baseball name, and I feel the opposite about Dylan Bundy. Dylan Bundy.
Oh, that's a great baseball name.
I know, it's an annoying 13-year-old. What are you talking about? That's a little league name, is what that is.
I can see that at least, but it's some kind of baseball name. Dylan Bundy. That's a very.
I guess. A pretty good baseball name. I'm of two minds about it at best. At least two minds.
I can at least concede that it's mostly a little league name. It's just the most annoying player on your little league team, which I can relate to right now because my kids are in little league, and there is all the annoying kids have those kind of names like Dylan or
Dylan. Stop it! No, quit eating the grass, Dylan.
Dylan.
Dylan. Stop. Dylan. Stop eating. No, that's goose poop. No, Dylan. Oh no.
People always like joke about how bad some little league parents are, but what, like sitting on the sidelines now and listening to it, like my kids are in the level where the coach still pitches at them, and there's still people who argue about the rules, and they're like yelling at their kid constantly. Like,
I love it.
Let the kid play, man. He's gonna grow up and be Dylan Bundy. Do you want that out of your kid?
You got to put untold amounts of pressure on these kids, otherwise, you know what they turn into? I don't even know. They just turned into nothing. You got to just yell at them constantly, and then you end up with a Bryce Harper. And don't we all want Bryce Harper to be our kid? I mean, I don't personally, but
yeah, I don't want. Well, like I mean, part of it, but
he seems like a nice enough guy, I'm sure. But I don't know. How can you grow up in Vegas and not be cooler? It freaks me out between him and Chris Bryant.
But he's saying, wait, Bryce Harper isn't cool? He's pretty cool. We know who is cool, Merritt.
Tell me,
Shane Bieber.
He is. He's
struck out 15 Orioles. Struck out a really bad team, but I mean,
he's handsome. I mean, cool.
He is handsome. Fun. I feel like that goes under the radar a lot for Shane Bieber. He's a very handsome man, but he struck out 15. Didn't walk anybody.
He's probably the best looking guy on the team at this point, I'd say. Let me review these headshots briefly. Oh God, Brad Hanson. Oh,
it's
God.
At least. Just skip over that. I feel like at least once or twice a month we get in a conversation about handsomeness or butts or something. But
well, you know, it's baseball.
Carrasco's up there. Carrasco's a very handsome man.
Yeah, but I think that's more his smile. Is really he's a very winsome smile.
It still counts.
Obviously, it's helpful. It's just he's not classically beautiful like say Shane Bieber, who's tall, lean, just has it all going for him. Really.
So what did you think of his 15 strikeout performance besides his handsome physique?
Is it great? Yes. Is it fun to watch him just annihilate people? Obviously. Did he really make Chris Davis look like the aforementioned little leaguer? He certainly did. I think he struck him out four times. on like eight pitches, it seemed like, too. He just cut him down. But this kind of goes back to not an issue, but a minor problem that comes along with something we talked about a little bit last year, too, I think. But the Indians play so many – last year played so many bad teams, it was hard to tell how good their pitching really was, you know? Like teams that were just objectively trying to be very terrible. And then, of course, you go up against a team that is even worse than I think anything that was rolled out last season in the AL Central. And a guy like Shane Bieber, who's very, very, very good. I think that cannot be ignored. You know, you get 26 swinging strikes in 107 pitches. That's an insane number to be hitting. It's just, I don't know. If I was going to nitpick, and here I am nitpicking, my problem with him would be the fact that he threw 107 pitches, 53 of which were fastballs, and then another 30 of which were sliders, and 19 curves and 5 changeups, which is a fine mix. The issue being it's dangerously close to the mix that he put up, you know, like last year. Obviously, it's just barely a sub 50% fastball mix, which is what he needs to do because he just gets too... what do you call it? Kind of predictable. We've talked about it a few different times. He just has a one way of attacking hitters, and that's why he needs to throw the changeup more because it opens him up to be able to get to, you know, just to work whole parts of the zone that he otherwise ignores. Other part. So because he doesn't do that, he does things like ignored in this 15 strikeouts was that he did give up the hardest hit ball of the entire day, 113.4 mile per hour. Ball after off the bat of Renato Nunez ended up being an out, which was great. But he did, you know, he got hit kind of hard a few times, and it happens to everyone, you know, and luck is always very important in baseball. But, you know, even the last out of the game was 110 mile an hour batted ball of Trey Mancini's bat. It was a ground out, which is great. I don't know. You can kind of look at it a whole bunch of different ways. Still, 15 strikeouts against guys who are ostensibly, you know, major league hitters.
Yeah, I think even not walking anybody is impressive in its own. Like, yes. Even if you're facing a bad team, you usually throw four bad pitches in at a bat at some point.
Sure, and I think that is the much more astoundingly amazing part is the no strikeouts amid 15 walks. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Reverse it. Jesus. but I don't know. It's just, as someone who likes to kind of watch the process and wants to see him grow into become more of a pitcher. I mean, obviously the location and the slider is dope and everything like that. I just want to see more of the changeup, if only because it'll make him way more of a complete pitcher and allow him to really cut down lefties with much more ease than he has, I suppose, comparatively in the past, you know? That's all. What do you think? What did you think of it? Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy what he did to those poor hitters?
Did you enjoy this poor man mercilessly cutting down other human beings?
Of course I did. Annihilated. He made these grown men look as though they were playing a different game. Chris Davis
my favorite thing out
four times.
My favorite thing about the whole game was it came out afterwards that apparently he was ducking Carl Willis. He didn't want to be pulled out of the game. And then when Carl was talking to him, he asked, how much does it mean to you? And he said, a lot. And so he just let him stay in, even though he was going over 100 pitches. That's really cool. I mean, he wasn't like in Trevor Bauer 120 pitch territory. So let him at least try it. And he pitches. Did, and I it mean, worked yeah. out. So I think that's cool. Yeah. I think that's one of those things.
He has how many? Yeah, he's got what?
Right. Yeah. He's no longer, he can have the cuffs off now.
Yeah. No, exactly. I think that is probably the most encouraging thing. This is, well, it's something we saw out of, if you want to go back almost nearly a year ago, it's something we saw out of Mike Clevenger. He threw a complete game against these same Orioles on April 21st of last year. It was his first complete game. It was kind of a coming out party between that and then the quote unquote hot gun game in Chicago. These are milestone games, and you know, again, you forget the guy's still only 24 years old. I mean, he's definitely miles ahead of where anyone would ever expected him to be as a pitcher. You know, like last year when he just posted a 4.55 ERA and all this stuff and had all these great peripherals, that was kind of far ahead of where we thought it was. But now that he's cut the hits down by a bunch, the home runs are a bit, but that happens, whatever. but he's still walking through the amount of guys, and the strikeouts are up, and that's that sort of thing. So just watching, this is the evolution. It's just, and I obviously am nitpicking, and I'm trying to force something here in terms of said evolution.
Yeah, I've seen Inside Out. I know how emotions work. I know that when that happened, he has a nice little Carl Willis island in his brain now that that joy and sadness will travel to eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works, man. Have you seen Inside Out?
Because that's how emotions work. Actually, it made me feel very sweet and good and happy on the inside.
See, so you know how it is. Like Shane Bieber has a nice little island now. It's Carl Willis's face just letting him pitch, and every once in a while he'll just hold up the little orb.
And the little memory is happiness and also anger, I think. It's two colors. It's two different colors.
I would think if you're a pitcher, like, you know how they always show, like, different people have all these things? You could have a lot of anger, I think.
A lot of red ones. Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of red people in there.
Oh, baby. That's a lot of Don Rickles in there. Oh, yes, definitely.
So the other thing that happened that was fun against the Orioles, and it's been going back for a while now, I found out, is that the Indians, they're pew-pewing their way to some wins. I mean, I don't know if you noticed when they hit doubles, triples.
You're underselling some of the greatest journalism of the 21st century. David Ferrand holds Pulitzer Prize-winning, reporter for the Washington Post. Get the hell out of here. Matt Lyons
We got
here.
Some finger guns.
We got finger guns, baby. That article called ass, and everyone needs to read it.
I was really excited about it. This is like the end result of several days of not knowing what to write about. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to write about finger guns now, because they did finger guns, and it's something weird that I can analyze. And it basically amounted to just going in, because Baseball Savant, this tool, if you haven't used it, it's super cool, because you can find, like, certain events, and it just pulls up the day for you. So cool. I did that, and then manually went to MLB TV whenever there was a double or a triple, and pulled out the old finger guns whenever they got them, and recorded that, and then using individual frames of the GIF and calculating it with 30 frames a second, I could find out who actually drew their finger guns the fastest and who shot the most shots and who shot them the fastest. And basically what it amounts to is Oscar Mercado. He is the Wild West. He's flinging those finger guns like nobody else. Kevin Pilecki draws really quick.
You should have sold it like a buzz. The results will shock you.
Oscar You'll Mercado, never guess who was player? The fastest. Mercado's also like a stone cold pewer, because he doesn't like show a lot of emotion when he's pewing. He's just like staring ahead and just shooting away, which is really cool. But
listen, when you're out there on the range and you're going up in a gunfight against another just cold hearted man with like got his cold finger steel at your hip, can't have emotion.
And even tonight, like against the A's, they're losing, but they're still finger gunning all over the place, which is cool. There's been several tonight there that jump on and just try to grab real quick just to ride the wave of my new brand, which is to be added every time somebody finger guns. I mean, Jose Ramirez did it as far as I can tell, it's the first time he's done it. Jason Kipnis did it again. His are the best because he just acts like he's fixing a sock, and then all of a sudden he's like, bam, I'm finger gunning. He's got just a gun out there.
Ooh, baby.
And then today he actually loaded the gun, which was really cool. As he was putting his stuff away, he loaded a fake gun and then flipped it and then did the finger gun. That was cool. Jordan Luplow, he's really sneaky about it. It is. It was really cool. I mean, last year they had what was that stupid hand thing they did?
I don't know. That was lame.
That's like corny Disney movie baseball stuff where they like were together or whatever. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, yeah. The entire rally together hashtag is trash. So this is the new one. Hashtag
the new hashtag
guns.
Better be pew pew.
Yeah. Ooh, there it is. Yeah, pew pew. And there's a little Indians logo. Let's just make a budget one. There we go.
Well, we were on the bang the drum thing for a while there, but I'm all on pew pew if they're all going to do this.
Now, bang the drum is dope, obviously, and I think it should always be around. But yes, pew pew is definitely it pops and it definitely has more legs in the social media world we live in.
And Kevin Pilecki's, if you ever saw his, I mean, he gets really into it. He like slaps his legs and pulls up the guns. Ooh. I'm looking at him now, going through them because they're so cool. I love all these. Jason Kipnis just sort of hides them and pops them out. And I haven't seen Lindor do that many, which is kind of disappointing. I'm just reading my own article right now. It's really, who wrote this thing? This is really good.
He's a genius.
I bet this author is really handsome. I can tell how good looking this guy is.
just by the word he used.
Oh, yeah. Type that finger gun in there.
All right. Calm down, Spence. Yeah, man,
that's the journalism for the week. The best writing. Every week we highlight the best Indians writing. We always do, Merritt. This week it's about the finger guns.
True, we do.
So read the finger guns. That was a pain to like grab all that stuff. I'm never doing that again, but it was fun to do.
Gifts, not to complain about the actual work sometimes. Making gifts sucks ass sometimes. I love doing it.
It's really fun. Helps. That feeling when you get it all done and it's all sitting there and you can just do the fun part of it, that's a really cool feeling to have. But it's getting there is hard. Especially with the track through multiple games. But having that Baseball Savant thing really helps to do it. So I wish they would just extend the length of their clips because they always cut them out right at the end. I guess for the most part that works, but when you're trying to find finger guns, you got to have a longer clip at the end. So
I mean, that's the thing. There should be another search feature for silly little things they do on the base pads. You know, this is also important to us.
Yeah, Baseball Reference should also have a pew speed tracker. That would have made this a lot easier. Why isn't Baseball Reference tracking how fast people draw their finger guns?
Because they're trapped in the past. That's the problem with baseball today.
This is
the
future of baseball.
This is the future of baseball. These old fuddy-duddies up in the league office. Let me tell you something, Matt. They look down at these young guys with their pew, 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 and they're like, oh, this is not the game I played when I was a boy.
There was no pew-pewing in my day.
There was never a pew-pew. We just loaded our musk. I don't know.
You were going with something there that just trailed off, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We just loaded.
Whatever, you know.
Yeah. But yeah,
muskets, etc. We just played the game the way it was meant to be played. No guns, just knives? I don't even know.
That's what they did. They rounded the bases and fake stabbed everybody. That was Is there one you would do if there was, unless you were going to finger gun? Seeing finger guns, that's what I would do now, I would finger gun. But if you wanted the Indians to do anything else, like we've seen other, there's the stirring the pot some people do, which is lame and overplayed.
Do you mean the stirring the bowl? Like the thing that James Harden does? Because that's more of a basketball thing anyway. I mean,
no, there's what team did that a couple years ago? Somebody did that a lot, but I've seen it a bunch. It's not creative.
There's the suck it that X-Pac used to do back in the Attitude Era of WWE, which would be hilarious. I mean, crotch grabs is always funny. That would last half a game before someone really cracked down. I like a big smile and wave as though it's like a kindergartner, like going, you know what I mean? Like, bye, you know, that sort of thing. That's always a fun one.
That would be the most infuriating for the other team, I think, if you're waving right at them. Forget finger guns, a big smile and wave, that's the worst. I don't know. I do like the suck it sign.
Big, like a belly rub, like you're a big fat man at a big old lunch. You're like,
You get the whole thing. You act like you're putting on a little picnic. You sit next down to the base, rub your belly, get
you're
going.
Tagged out, you know, the whole thing.
But you know what? You celebrated. That's what's important. Let the kids play, right?
Listen, let the kids play. All
right. So the last thing I have for games this week is that a couple weeks ago, when we were on it must have been a week ago, but you were talking about the aforementioned low point of the Indians. And Tito playing all these guys who shouldn't be playing all the time. And I think I lumped Mike Freeman in a little too early.
Rude.
Because what in the world? This guy, he hasn't played a whole lot anywhere. He was drafted by the Diamondbacks. How old is he? He's already 31. He only has a little major league experience. But all of a sudden, he has a 21% walk rate. And he has a 419 on base percentage. And I don't, is this Joey Votto? Did we find another Joey Votto?
Almost definitely, right? I mean, there's no two ways about it. Here's a guy who is just he's the best out there these days. I'll be honest with you, I hadn't even noticed until you mentioned this yesterday.
I know he had it in AAA too. It was super short in AAA. It was only 9 games, but it's only been 14 in the majors. But that's now 2 levels. He's kept this really high walk rate out of nowhere, and I don't get it. And I like it because this is like my kind of guy. This is why I like Roberto Perez. This is why I like Carlos Santana. I like the guys that draw a bunch of walks and maybe run into a home run. And maybe that seems like what Freeman is, which is kind of cool.
Well, is he doing anything outsized to what he... I mean, the thing is, we're just dealing with such a small sample size. Not to get too nerd heavy on this one. I don't even know, man. You know, he's swinging at less pitches out of the zone. He's swinging at
16% of the pitches outside of the zone, which is ridiculous.
But he's swinging at only 48% in the zone, which is a 20-point drop-off almost from his... He's just not swinging. He's like, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean... Damn, pitch moves too much these days. I can't even make contact. Just gonna go see what happens.
Can't keep up with these dang kids and their finger guns and their moving pitches.
Here's my approach. I won't swing. Oh, interesting, interesting. Now, he could take this to a whole other level and you know, pull a Brandon Guyer and just be unsettlingly over the plate. And then, you know, raise that on-base percentage even more. You know, take a few hits. I mean, yeah, he's not good usually, and he wasn't supposed to be anything at all, but... Here we are, 20...
He was just a signing, right? He wasn't even a trade or anything. They just grabbed
him. No, he just kind of showed up one day. I don't even think they signed him. He just won't go home. He's just been on the Indians for a while. Like, get out of here. No, I'm good. It's all right.
Hey, man, so anything? Oh, we didn't talk about Oscar Mercado. How did we, other than his finger gunning?
Well, are we done with Mike Freeman? All right, moving on right on.
Did you have anything else about Mike Freeman? He's kind of really good. He walks a little bit. I want to just publicly apologize to calling him a veteran retread and lumping him in with Carlos Gonzalez.
Do I prefer him over Carlos Gonzalez at this point? I do prefer him over Carlos Gonzalez at this point. I just wish Carlos Gonzalez would go away. They should have kept Hanley Ramirez. That's like God's honest truth.
Yeah, between the two of them, if Gonzalez is going to DH anyway, Hanley Ramirez is way more fun and hit the ball way harder. So
yeah, exactly. Carlos Gonzalez hasn't hit the ball hard in 150 years. Like, he's been...
I don't get why Hanley doesn't have a job anywhere else yet either. Like, somebody could do something with it. Hit the ball really hard every single time.
You know, the worst part, I think, about the era of tanking is that one of the two aspects of tanking, the first one obviously being get players who can't play good, so you are bad, but also the other aspect is cut payroll, which means you're going to have a lot of guys on rookie contracts and things of that nature. By the very nature of who he is and whatnot, it'd be hard to pay someone like Hanley Ramirez a rookie, like a, you know, a league minimum sort of a thing. It used to be, when you were bad, you worked your way out of the league. You know, you'd follow that same old track back in the old days. You'd go from, let's say you were a good player on, I don't know, the Yankees. You'd go from the Yankees to the Blue Jays to the Orioles, and you start making your way to the Midwest and wander through like the Reds and the Pirates and the Indians and the Royals. And then you kind of wend your way out there to the Padres or whoever. And then you just kind of disappear. You know, you have that ride in the sun that almost literally you ride west and you just kind of disappear off into the ocean. And that doesn't happen anymore. Teams are too smart and old players are too expensive, and it's just Hanley Ramirez is just gone now. He's going to go to, I don't know, Korea or the Dominican, or where's he from? Yeah, the Dominican, and just hit bombs for another 15 years or something. You know, live that sweet Julio Franco dream. But it's a damn shame we don't get to see him kind of wind his way out of the league.
I think it's because we still have these older players who were part of before all the smart people came to front offices who were. I think eventually it's going to catch up again where we're going to have the riding off into the sunset thing, but it'll be more applicable players to how the game is today. Like Hanley Ramirez, I don't think he fits in anywhere. Because exactly what you were saying, teams are cutting payroll and they're not going to get a player like Hanley. But it's also weird because he does kind of fit. He's a really hard-hitting player, which is what people are trying to get now.
I want to believe you. I really do. But it's just with advances in player development and the league getting younger and young people being cheaper – and everything like that, there's just 35 is going to be start becoming a harder and harder ceiling of player age.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is it's going to be younger in the future. Like, there's not even going to be this Hanley Ramirez being left out to dry because he won't be here at 35.
Right,
like, his ride to the sunset would have already happened.
You know, yeah, exactly. Players will be out of here by, you know, their sunset years will be on bad teams when they're 33, 34, as opposed to, you know, 38, 39, which is, you know, I mean, which is exactly what Ramirez did, I guess. It's just he went right from Boston to Cleveland to gone. Either was no Kansas City stint, there's no... I don't know. Angels was a good one back in the day.
Which Rockies, is kind of sad. Maybe. You're right. It's yeah.
It's a damn shame. I mean, Mark Reynolds is a classic.
Because if you're tanking, you might as well just use your prospects and let them see what they do. And
yeah, no, exactly. Suck, I mean, obviously, you don't want to burn your if you have a top flight prospect, you don't want to burn their what do you call them? But like those guys who you drafted, you know, in the 13th round, the 15th round, maybe they're good. You know, maybe something will click and you'll have a guy who's a good reliever for a year or two and you can trade him for more prospects or something.
Or the Eric Stametz, and then you just never call him up again.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long... Eric Stametz. Oh, right.
Going back to that great finger guns article, it required going back to a lot of old games. And, oh, this team was so ugly at the beginning of the year. No Francisco Lindor. That seems like a long time ago. Oh, Eric Stametz was a thing. It was really gross for a while.
The Indians have had some weird players come through the last couple of years. Like, remember Oliver Drake?
He went through everywhere. He was on several teams.
Last year for a bit. Who else was on this team that I just don't... Max Maroff was kicking around for a bit.
Maybe that was this year, but yeah.
I'm just thinking of names, guys who I've already half forgotten about. I'm glad Luplo is turning into something. Adam Rosales, Brandon Barnes.
Adam Rosales, I completely forgot was on the team last year. And then isn't
like who is Ben Taylor? I don't know, but he pitched 6 innings for the Indians last year.
All these people just keep sneaking in, and we don't know why.
But they're just here.
Ridiculous!
Oh, look at that mustache! God damn, we should get him back. Woo, baby! Never mind. Back in the Ben Taylor.
Remember
train.
Matt Belisle? That was a guy.
I do,
Jeff
actually.
Bellevue.
I remember These Matt all... Belisle because his name Belisle is also another name for Satan. So
yeah, that is a thing. He's also the boss of the third act of Diablo 3. So
that's true. And I believe it is a name that pops up in one of the Max Payne video games.
Oh, Alexi Ogando pitched a single game for the Indians, which I actually thought was more. He really only pitched an inning. Wow. I thought he was around a while.
I'll be honest with you. I was a little bit excited for Alexi Ogando. I liked Alexi Ogando when he was younger. Yeah. Mm.
He kicked around in AAA for a little while, but exactly one inning for the Indians and never saw again. They're cycling through people a lot slower this year because the bullpen is a complete garbage, so that's a good thing, I guess.
But. Right, exactly. The churn has slowed down, which is a positive. Right. Yeah, the churn is there until you find your three-headed monster, Brad Hand, Adam Simber, and Nick Whitgren? Whatever. I don't care. If it works, it works.
Yeah, we didn't mention that Neil Ramirez is no longer part of that. He was DFA'd, so that's a good
We don't
thing,
have
so.
To. It's fine.
No, it's... I agree. Never speak of it again. We should talk at least a little bit before we get to questions about Oscar Mercado coming up, because we spent
definitely
all of last episode, and then he's looked pretty impressive, right? He's had a couple hits, a couple doubles. Mm-hmm. He drew a walk. His first game was awful, but he's already looked a lot more confident at the plate. He made some stuff happen with his speed already. I believe it was... Didn't he get from second to third, and then there was a bad throw, which is basically all the pressure from how fast he is, and it'll be a while before we have a Spoles Statcast stuff, but he's already up there in sprint speed, and there's going to be more coming soon.
We're I think we're actually closing in on what could be a very firm outfield soon, and I'm excited about that, and that outfield will look as probably like what we saw tonight, Monday night, Luplo in right. Did Mercado start tonight?
He did
start tonight.
Left.
Yeah, in left, and then you put Martin in center. I mean, obviously, it's not ideal. It's not perfect, but it's probably a firmer outfield than we've really kind of had a feel for in since the beginning of the year, really, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's like we talked before about Carlos Gonzalez. They got to figure out what the hell is going on with Jake Bowers, like what he is. I don't know if it's going to be a platoon thing between him and Luplo. But they got to figure out that side of things as well. So
yeah, I guess Naquin, oh God, I hope he's not in the factor, but I guess he's going to be back at some point in platoon somewhere. But
yeah, I don't know that. What the hell?
I'm fine with giving up on him already. I mean, like,
has reverse splits. I mean, it's in small samples and everything, but he has reverse splits so far this year. Which is
I don't feel like Tito pays attention to that. I think he just strictly goes left right, doesn't he?
I mean,
I don't know that he looks at actual splits a whole lot. I could be wrong, but
the pair of them are really going to annihilate left-handed pitchers, I guess. So
and nobody else.
They have that going for them, so that's great.
Yeah,
but no, I know it's we're closing in. I think on a firmer outfield, ideally. Everything Luplo is doing now is real and not a total sample size ruse. And Jake Bowers finds himself and Mercado is the real deal as well. And suddenly Leonis Martinez is a fourth outfielder. And if that actually happens, the Indians go from having a pit of hell for the outfield to suddenly a very good outfield that came together as if by accident. And like, I'm not even hoping for like amazing numbers for any of these guys. Like basically what Luplo is doing, what 258, 319, 532 is his slash line, like something like that out of Bowers. I mean, you can shift the on base percent. I mean, he's got a 319 on base percentage as it is. He's got to start hitting some more power, but that's about it. He just has to get some more hits, and then Mercado doing whatever he does. So I don't know. I'm not looking for, obviously, you know, solid gold across the board, but something valuable would be nice. And I don't know. I think we're close to seeing something like that. Whether it will take until the second half to start taking shape, I don't know. You wonder how much time the Indians have. They're not like far, far, you know, out of the lead or anything like that. So there's definitely time to make stuff up. And with Clevinger coming back and news of Kluber coming down, and obviously the emergence of Jeffrey Rodriguez, right? Yeah. I don't know. And the bullpen finally like coming together. The team is much better now than it was a month ago. So that's a positive, at least. It's got a – I think there's a probably a twin series coming soon. It's going to – don't tell us a lot about the Indians, and that's maybe not even tell us a lot, but at least have far-reaching effects on the season, and the fact that the outfield is starting to take shape. Again, we're counting on
a lot. Isn't it nice to have a series this early that's going to matter quite a bit, at least a little bit? It's kind of neat to have this win series we can actually look forward to instead of just, I wonder how many games will be ahead of the Twins after this series.
Well, I mean,
it sucks that the Indians have been bad, but...
In fairness, the Indians... Last couple of years, the only series that have matters have been the ones in April and May, because they're the only ones that were close. So that, at least,
right?
Yeah, I don't know, because they got a 4-game set against the White Sox and then 3 against the Twins to the beginning of June. So that's a nice little warm up against the Sox, and then there you go, hit them, and then the Yankees come to town to dampen all the excitement. That's great.
With half their roster on fire, and they'll still.
But then it goes Reds, Tigers, Rangers, so, and then Tigers again, and then Royals, and then Orioles. Okay, boy, all right.
That's a couple winning streaks in there for you after
wow.
getting your ass
okay,
kicked by
so,
the Yankees.
All right, so after the Yankees leave town, Reds, Tigers, Rangers, Tigers, Royals, Orioles, Royals, Reds, Twins. And that gets us up to the All-Star break.
That's not a bad little streak there.
No, there's some room to be made up there, pretty much.
Now, does that almost have a bad effect? Like, if we're thinking really far ahead here, if they say the Indians do like really well over that stretch, and then they somehow like bust open a huge lead in the AL Central, and then I would hope the front office is smarter than to just realize to rely on that. But if it looks like the Indians are all of a sudden a completely fixed team, and they don't bother doing anything at the deadline, is that another like blowout we're looking at in the postseason? Because the deadline has always been my point where I'm looking for them to put up together their final team, and if they don't add anything, I'm going to be a little bit worried, I think.
Well, remember, we're supposed to enjoy this all while we can, first of all. We all know this.
Gross, Merritt.
But that's a good question. I mean, if they start rattling off a bunch of wins all of a sudden, I don't know. I mean, that's... One would hope that the front office sees that they are good and they can do something more in the postseason, but what they would need to get would be at that point. We can't figure that out now because, again, is the outfield coming together? And if it is, then they don't need any outfielders because they would have 3 outfielders under team control for, you know, the next 7 years or whatever. Do they need a pitching or starting pitcher? No. Even if another one gets hurt, they don't need another starting pitcher. Do they need a bullpen guy? Yeah, probably. I guess the only place you could really fix would be second base, I guess.
That's not getting fixed. Nice try, Merritt. That's staying for a while.
Shut up. All right. My boy can dream. Man. No, I don't know. That's a fair question. But, I mean, I think if your question is actually, if they rattle off a bunch of wins, are the Indians going to be buyers at the trade deadline? They have to be, right? Like, they
I
have
would hope
to be.
So. Yeah.
I mean, unless they really hit the skids, you know, like I would hope that they win the next couple against the Athletics, and then because they got Athletics, Rays, Red Sox. Oof, they got a tough row to hoe here. Keep their head above water before this soft period comes through. So we'll see. No, I don't know. Let's not have this conversation now because it's.
It could end up being depressing later on. So we'll figure it out.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain, or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission, or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
So how about we answer some questions instead?
Let's do it!
On Twitter, what do you want us to know? We used to do this every week, but now that we're doing more interviews, we'll just do like a mailbag episode once a month, I think. Or eventually make it a different show. We haven't decided yet. But for now, it's the first question from @GhostInTheShell. He wanted to know, how do you feel about an outfield of the future that consists of Zimmer, Mercado, Johnson, which Daniel Johnson, with Greg Allen coming off the bench, which that's a really, I mean, it sort of blends in with what we were just talking about, but like this could be the future outfield of Bradley Zimmer, Oscar Mercado, Daniel Johnson is maybe a couple more years away, but then Greg Allen, the fourth outfielder. And that's being maybe a little optimistic with every single prospect working out the way they're supposed to, but that's a pretty good, I mean, Daniel Johnson looked really good, making the Yan Gomes trade continue to look outstanding, but Bradley Zimmer is a huge question mark, and I still don't believe that much in Greg Allen. So maybe half of that. I'm fully in on Oscar Mercado right now. I'm really optimistic about Johnson in a couple years, but the other two I'm not so sure of. But what do you think? How would you feel about that outfield and the chances of it actually happening?
I mean, chances are low, obviously, because they're fucking prospects. But I'd love it. I circle back to what I just said before about what looks like if it all works out, and then you start running into an issue of room. Like, I don't know. I still think the best spot for Jake Bowers, or at least right now, is still the outfield, just only because he has the legs to play out there. The arm is shit. That's why you put him in left field. And just keeping him out, because I don't know. I don't want to waste whatever athleticism he has in the DH role, and I don't think he's going to be playing first base this year. Maybe next year. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, if Zimmer actually can finally turn into something, that'd be cool. I think that's the crux of it all. Like you said, Johnson's beating the hell out of the ball in Double A this year. I think that if he does this again next year, he's still probably, I don't know. He might actually get a call up to Triple A this year, honestly, if he's really playing this well.
I mean, yeah, he could jump a couple, like speed up a little bit if he keeps hitting this well. So,
right. I mean, he already played what 89 games in Double A last year too. So he's got 100 and some odd games, you know, 500 at bats or whatever it is, almost in Double A. It's not, I don't know if it's healthy or not to keep him there. And the Indians don't, as much as I said about it would be cool if this worked out for the outfield, it hasn't yet. They still need outfielders, and I mean, it's up to them, obviously, but it was an outfielder of, like the guy said, what was it, Mercado, Johnson, and Zimmer? Dope. I think if it's an outfielder of what they have now, that'd be dope too if they all actually started hitting. It would be nice if they could find some homegrown outfielders, I think, is the takeaway I have here. Thoughts?
No, I would love. I said I only believed in half of it, but I would love for all of that to be true. Like,
sure,
having a fully outgrown, homegrown outfield would be incredible. I think that's
it would be super dope. I mean, hey,
especially with those guys, because that's four super fast outfielders. Because Zimmer, Mercado, I think Johnson has really good speed, and of course, Greg Allen flies. So that's a really fun fast outfield, which is cool.
Yeah. Well, and even I mean, as much as we want to poo-poo him because he takes some amazing routes in the outfield. I mean, Jake Bowers is fast. He's fast for a big guy at the very least. And Lupulo's fine too. So,
yeah.
Thanks for the question, whoever.
Yeah, thank you, guys on the show. So at 614 Sports Fan, he asked, is there a merit to arguments we're hearing about giving young players like Mercado and Allen consistent playing time when they're up? Are young players incapable of performing well in a platoon? If so, where do we go when Naquin comes back?
I don't understand the question.
So he's basically asking, is there, people always say like young players, they need, basically what he's saying is this radical idea of giving young players a chance to play instead of just platooning them all the time. Like, is it good to do that instead of just is maybe that part of the reason we've seen like the Yandy Diaz and now Gio Urshela and Jesus Aguilar leave and be so successful is that they didn't get consistent time in Cleveland and they're getting it elsewhere and proving that they can play when they get it. So, is there anything to letting these young players actually just play every day compared to platooning them, which is maybe you can squeeze slightly more value out of a platoon than letting them just play every day, but maybe it's just better to let them grow as an everyday player?
Well, I mean, I think we all kind of agree, right, that it's better for baseball players to play more, right? That's kind of like an old adage, that, yeah. I guess. It's just one of those things. Yeah, we're all just like, it's like baseball is a game you have to play every single day. By the way, the last month, Yandy Diaz is hitting 225, 276, 425.
I always knew he was garbage. That's what I always said.
Trash boy, trash, 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 trash. BABIP. He's a BABIP king. Anyway, I miss you forever.
please come back.
please come back. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, I think it's not so much, at least as I see it, it's not so much just let the kids play. It's don't play the old guys who are bad, right?
It's kind of that simple.
Yeah. Like, if you have a known commodity, or quality or quantity or whatever the hell you want to call it, in Carlos Gonzalez or, you know, the now departed Hanley Ramirez or whoever, and that known quantity is a 55 OPS plus and, you know, statuesque outfield play, or you have a guy who was heralded by one of the more forward-thinking organizations in baseball as a good hitter who has some speed in the outfield, or you have a guy who's young, exciting, fast, hits the ball to all fields and can play center field, and both of these guys are under, I think they're both under 24, right? Talking about Bowers and Mercado, right? Yeah, they're both years from whatever prime we hope from them. It doesn't make any sense for me to play the old guy. I guess that's the way I always look at it. If you have a bad old player and also, I guess, a poorly performing young player, but who has upside, I bet on the upside every time because the other guy's not going to get any better. We know this because that's how these arcs work, right? Jose Bautista is an outlier. Guys don't just become superstars at 29 or 31 or whatever all of a sudden. And Carlos Gonzalez is years past 31 anyway. That's just, I don't know. That's just how, I mean, I know we harp on a lot, but I don't think it's a radical idea at all to just play the young guys. And if it turns out, yeah, they have an intense platoon split. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've only seen how many at bats out of, Jake Bowers in his career. Let me even look at this. I can do that. I can use the internet to find this out.
Either way, like at least let him get a chance against those other guys and beat the platoon disadvantage that he has instead of just enforcing
it constantly. 548 plate appearances over 2 years from Jake Bowers. And that encapsulates his first full season or his first season, which is almost all the time. I think just a season you can almost throw out, right? Because it's just, you're new. No one knows what to think of you. There's no book on you. And so then they adjust to you and you have to adjust back. And like, it's not even a full season. We don't know anything about him yet. If you want to call him a platoon hitter, then you have to call him a guy with reverse splits anyway, or even not that. He's a 701 OPS against righties and a 662 against lefties. He hits everyone poorly right now. So, I don't know. You figure out if they're a platoon, and you don't usually figure that out when they're less than 600 at bats into their career and 23 years old, you know?
Yeah, there's just a lot of assuming, like, this guy's a platoon player. Like, I think, I agree with you, like, if they're older and they're platoon players, sure, use them as one, but not when they're, not this consistently many young players is shoehorning them into that role.
I mentioned Mark Reynolds a little while ago, and I mean, I think even when he was younger, it was stunningly obvious that he was probably going to be a platoon. I'm just going to pull up his 2008 stats and see if what I'm saying is in fact true. Yeah, he had a 706 OPS against righties, and a 982 OPS against lefties. So there was just evidence very early on. And that's only his second year. Even, you know, so when you only have this small, small sample to go off of, and the sample, if anything, says not a platoon player, just isn't hitting well because he's young and he hasn't figured everything out yet, then yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so thanks, 614 Sports Fan.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks for dragging us down into platoon old people.
Mark Reynolds' nickname is the Sheriff of Swattingham.
Of course it is. At Razo Eric 617, he said, at what point does the tribe consider not sending Oxcart, which by the way is using your nickname, that's cool, back down? Yeah. What's the timetable on cargo in relation to that, in your opinion? I think he's basically asking, when does Terry Francona's love of recency bias overwrite his love of sending down prospects who might be really good in place of old guys? Which to this point, Mercado's... Damn. He's done a lot to show that he deserves to be here, so maybe I don't know if Tyler Naquin comes back and Mercado goes down, I'm gonna riot. I'm gonna burn down a city. But how good does he have to be, you think, before the tribe just say he's here, he's not leaving, he is essentially just the everyday outfielder any of the spots, he's just here every day. And do you think that is it cargo that goes down or away when it's that time?
Well, who else would it be, right? I guess that's the first question.
I mean, it could be Naquin. They just don't, when he's activated, they just send him
down. Oh, right. So when he comes back, they just send him back down. Right.
Right, yeah. It's got to be the two of them right now, though, right? Like
yeah, because that's how that. I don't think they're going to do anything with Jake Bowers. I mean, I don't think they want to start burning options on him this early. Carlos Gonzalez, Jordan Luplo. as long as he's hitting, you know, as long as he's giving opportunities, I think as long as he in the opportunities he's having, he is in fact hitting. That's it's a vague way of saying it, but that's just what he has to do. He had a couple hits tonight too on Monday, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he's had a couple doubles. At one point, he only had doubles. He had
two or three. So I mean, he's definitely performing the way people ask him to. Yeah, I mean, he got another hit tonight. As long as he's hitting the ball hard and playing great outfield defense, I think that's all you can ask of him, because the more he proves, especially in the outfield, I think is vital, because Carlos Gonzalez just isn't good there, and the Indians do need guys to play outfield, and there's only so many DH spots. So yes, getting rid of him isn't really expensive. Talking about Gonzalez, we signed a $2 million deal. Send him back down, do whatever the hell you want with him. I mean, I don't. There's no number we could really put it on, because it could just fucking happen anyway. They just send him down and also send Naquin down for some reason and call up some other old man that they sign or something, or call back Greg Allen. It's some insane new thing, but
I would hate that too. If somehow Oscar Mercado gets down and Greg Allen comes up again, and then he's only a fourth outfielder.
God, I know.
Why are you doing this again? Why are you putting that out there, Mary?
I mean, worst case, Oscar Mercado stays and he's just the fourth outfielder. But I think he's always keeps on hitting. And I know, I mean, we've heard Francona say good things about him in the spring and all this stuff. But quote unquote playing well is what he has to do, and he's been playing well. He's walking. He's getting hits, driving in runs, stealing bases, causing havoc on the base paths. He's being a dynamic player, and I think when you keep on popping off the screen for a guy who's not looking at the numbers, that makes sometimes even more of an impact than just, you know, posting a 300 average.
And I think the words from Francona is more important than we might think. I mean, like, if you think of Yandy Diaz and Francisco Mejia, there was always, like, these slight jabs at something about them. But there hasn't been any of that about Mercado. It was always about how good his swing was and how they think he's going to be here later on. I mean, there's always the sprinkled in just generic answers that, oh, he's going to be a great player, he's working hard, and all that garbage. But there are very specific things that Terry Francona seemed to like in spring training about him, which I think is encouraging. There wasn't any, like, we think he's going to hit well, but he has to work on his defense, or whatever the hell he said about Mejia, which was, that seemed really weird. But
yeah,
I think this is one case where he actually, right, yeah. Yeah, so that's
like even with like even like Yandy Diaz, who said like he's going to be here for a long time, batting fourth or whatever. Like that was kind of vague. He didn't say anything he liked about him, but he has been effusive in his praise of Oscar Mercado. So
yeah, because with Yandy, he always had the thing about how he wouldn't take infield or whatever. He wasn't a good enough third baseman or outfielder or whatever.
Yeah. But I don't
know. So next question, at Slang EUG. He asked, do you think ownership made moves this offseason with an eye towards next season? The Twins are likely for real, and there are too many holes to fill this season to compete if the offense continues to perform as they have.
Well, if you listen to me, you know that this is my exact theory. This is a secret rebuild that no one's talking about. And, you know, like next year is, what, 2020? They still have their entire pitching staff for at least one more year after that. I know Bauer is convinced he'll be traded next year. But at this point, with his shitty RA and all this stuff, he's, you know, at this point, he's like the third or fourth best pitcher on the team. Oh, that's fun. At this point, Shane Bieber is the ace. Everyone remember that now. Note this down.
It's true. Shane Bieber's ace.
Note this day, 5/20/2019. Shane Bieber, ace. And you know what? Yeah, maybe they are for real talking about the Twins.
I don't think they are. I'm not there yet. The pitching staff's going to come down and it's going to drag the rest of the team.
It's just not very good is the problem. I mean,
that is a word for it. Yeah, it's not very good.
I do like Jake Odorizzi. He's outperforming a lot of his peripherals. He's walking a lot of people. He's just avoiding hits a lot. So that's helpful when you have the outfield they do. I mean, that definitely is helping. But I don't know. I mean, when you have a guy like Polanco hitting the way he is and it's just, there's, I don't know. I think there's a lot. I said this last month, I think, right? I think that what they're doing is a little less for real than what the Indians are capable of doing. Whether that holds true, you know, a lot of teams can have fluke half seasons and players can have fluke seasons sometimes. The guys who are performing for them are guys who were supposed to perform like this ages ago, you know, guys like Buxton, not so much Kepler to an extent, but he's always shown to be a pretty good player. But, you know, like someone like Eddie Rosario is in the process of producing his entire wins above replacement total for his entire career in a single season. You know, I don't know how for real that is. When I see a 343 batting average, my eyebrow raises more than anything else, because that's usually driven by, you know, luck more than anything else. Again, he's changed his swing a little bit, and he's made adjustments, so he's not the same player he always was. And this is something we always have to keep in mind. These guys are attempting to make changes to who they are when they are bad, usually.
Yeah. But, and as far as Slang's question, what was the part? Oh, do you think there's a secret rebuild this year? I think that's not too far terribly off. I also think the Indians just aren't going to be going for it in any one year. I think I've said that a lot in post and in the podcast. I think they're just spreading out their chance to win over several years as much as possible, which means they're going to have years like this where they're spread really thin. And then in a couple of years when those better prospects come up, maybe they'll have other shots. But I don't know if they quite kick this year altogether, but if maybe they will at the deadline, these slight trades where they get better players next year as part of a small rebuild, and they could still probably win the AL Central and at least get in the postseason, even still doing that. So I don't know.
No, I mean, that's kind of how I think they've admitted that as much too. You know, like the goal is stack it all up and go win right now. It's always been to keep the window open as long as possible and hope something good happens, and maybe a couple of those good prospects become great ones. You know, like they never did the tear down rebuild like the Astros, and I hold their front office in high esteem, but I don't think they have quite the minds that, you know, like the Cubs or whoever have, and, you know, obviously the luck and the past good drafting and things like that too. So they never really had the bullets to get that keystone guy or two, and they never had the other guys to make that killer trade, you know, like that ended up getting the other good players and things like that. You know, like the Astros, you know, they got several amazing players in consecutive drafts that they built an entire championship around. So, by the way, Jorge Polanco has elevated his fly ball rate to 51%. I don't know what's happening with him, but whatever. Maybe this is real. Oof. If so, damn. Suddenly he is the best shortstop in baseball.
That's for some odd reason. I don't know if that's quite real, but
God damn. Like, wow. All right. He's only 25. So, woo, baby.
So we'll finish up with one more question from @tribe90753671. He asked, does Jose Ramirez stay in the lineup all year, no matter how long he struggles? Does he ever get benched or sent to Columbus to work on a swing? Boy, is he bad. I mean, even his last 7 days where he had a couple, he helped out in the blowouts, he's still not a good hitter this season at all. It's still the same things as dating back to last. He's gone from Michael Brantley to Tyler Naquin as far as his approach, which is really depressing. It's high fastballs are just pumping to him, and he's not hitting any of them. He's still not even striking out that much. It's 14.9%, but it's just not, the results aren't there. And I guess how long do the Indians let him sit at this bad of a hitter and not move him anywhere or do anything? I mean, I've been surprised he hasn't gotten at least like a day or two off. He's just always been.
I know that is what's strange. Like, what is benching? Just a couple of days off, I guess. I don't even know. I don't think they're going to send him down to the minors. I think that's a little extreme. No, but I mean, maybe a couple of days off or something might happen. That's about the most I could ever expect out of it, because, like you said, this is really very terrible at this point. He's on a very bad offensive team. He's like the second worst hitter right now, I think. Actually, he is tied with Carlos Gonzalez for
OPS. All the shit we're talking about, Carlos Gonzalez, and then here's Jose.
And turns out, uh-oh, he's worse.
Are we counting past players? Because our old pal Eric Stemetzer with a -40 WRC plus is...
I can't believe he was as bad as he was.
And he had 15 games to do it.
I know, he had 48 plate appearances. What the hell? How the hell did that happen? That team was garbage. I think he'll get a couple of days off soon. I don't know. It's weird. You know, this is one of those things about the team that you just kind of look at and just scratch your head, because, like, his OBP should be his batting average, his OPS should be his slugging percentage, and something else. He's just not hitting the ball hard. It's so strange. It's unsettlingly strange.
Well, he is hitting it pretty hard, right? It's not a matter of not hitting the ball hard. It's just nothing is dropping for him. Right? Was I reading that wrong? I don't know. I thought he was hitting the ball.
I don't remember. I haven't really looked at his advanced stats in a couple days. So,
oh nope, never mind. Days. Forget that. Oh my god,
all bad, stuff.
Why did I think he was?
Oops.
I thought he was hitting the ball hard.
Nope. No, he's bad. Actually,
he has a 15. He's in the 15th percentile for It's not great. But I mean, he was never been a super hard hitter. I guess we can hang our hats on that. It's just been
that's
placing
a good
it well
thing to think about. Well. Sure, bud. All right.
Here's some encouraging for you. His exit velocity isn't necessarily down. It's not down at all. It's not down from previous years at all. It's everybody else is hitting the ball harder than he is now. That's not good.
In this world where the ball is easier to hit and everything like that, and I mean, his BABIP is at 204, 252 last year. He hit all those home runs, though, 319 the year before that.
Yeah, if you want to know how
pulling the ball too much, he isn't pulling the ball as much. He's hitting the ball harder than he ever has, if anything. He's hitting more fly balls than he ever has. He's
barely hitting it. As far as average exit velocity, it's barely a change. The hard hit percentage is a little less, but like last year, he hit the ball hard 88.9% of the time was his average exit velocity, and he was in the 38th percentile. This year, he's hitting it average exit velocity of 88.8, and it's the 15th percentile. So it's the rest of the league is just passing him and hitting the ball so hard, and it's depressing.
Yeah, he has a career high soft hit percentage, which is, I think, less than 85 miles per hour exit velocity, and also a career high in hard hit at 37.6. That's over 95. Very strange. I assume things will even out, but maybe a couple days off would be good for him. Because, again, his fly ball rate is up. I don't know. All the trends are right. I don't know if he's just shitty now. I assume that's not what's happening because things don't just happen like that. He's chasing the ball more than he ever has, almost.
It just feels like teams have an attack for him now, which they never really had before. Yeah. They just have a plan and they use it so well against him every single time, no matter how what he's doing, which is sad.
Yeah, maybe they just need to fire Ty Van Berkelio.
Who?
Can't do it because he's not real. So
he's not real. That's not a person.
You know, when a guy says, I'm not going to change what I've been doing for 7 years, and you're just like, wait a minute, they've been worse offensively every year for the last 7 years.
Let's connect the dots here. I don't know what's going on. Something smells a little fishy.
Okay, this is nothing. This is how normal baseball is. You just keep the same guy around, try doing the same thing over and over. That's how they
do it. We just need more Carlos Gonzalez's. Just a couple more of those, and we'll be there. That's what we need.
What's the portal for Carlos Gonzalez? Carlos Gonzalez, maybe? Something like that?
I believe so.
I'll go with that.
All right, Merritt, that's going to do it for our episode this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Whether you're subscribed, don't forget to on iTunes, Spotify, all that fun stuff. Pew your guns, shoot your fingers, whatever you want to do. Merritt, talk to you next week. Thank you.